Welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And today we've been reading Exploded View by Carrie Tiffany. But first, book news, and we're just going to look at the top 10 this week with Annie to see if there's anything new and exciting for us.
Yes, well, so at the top of the table we have Trent Dalton with Boy Swallows Universe. I think he's been there for 6 weeks straight, which
is a
pretty incredible feat.
Yeah,
and I'm sure
amazing.
You and Amanda would have talked about the fact that he's not on the shortlist for the Miles Franklin, so I wonder whether that'll affect his sales.
No, but actually, no, I completely forgot. I was still mourning Tim Winton not being on the list.
You're two guys.
Isn't that funny? I'm actually surprised now that you mention that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think it was probably the people's pick, but yeah, so he didn't make it onto the shortlist.
I am surprised,
still selling like gangbusters, so it's all good.
Yes.
Then we have Kate Atkinson's new book, Big Sky, which is a Jackson Brodie book. That's her detective series. It's good fun. It's not what I was expecting from a detective novel, but it is a good study of a small town.
But this has been an ongoing series, hasn't it? It's not the first Jackson Brodie.
Yeah,
so she is an author that I think I will love, but I haven't read anything of hers yet.
Yeah,
and I know
I've read a couple of hers now.
God in Ruins. Mm. Which ones have you read?
So I've read Transcription, which was her most recent fiction novel, and then this one, which is her most recent crime.
Yeah.
But Life After Life is the one that she's really known for, which is a kind of sliding doors historical novel about a person who is born in one reality and dies in another, and then that carries on each of those strands kind of is added to.
They have different chances or different lives.
I'm
keen to get to her.
So she's in at number two. Then Michael Mosley with Claire Bailey and Justine Patterson is in at number three with the Fast 800 recipe book.
Oh, yes.
Dark Emu is in at number four, Bruce Pascoe.
Yeah.
So that is just selling its socks off at the moment. He released The Young Dark Emu a couple of weeks ago, and that's still selling well. Yeah, the latest quarterly essay, which is by Eric Jensen, which is on the election and its aftermath. Then at number six, we've got City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yes, we've got that one coming up, I think.
Yes, we do. You probably have this one in your household at the moment, David Walliams with The World's Worst Teachers.
Yes, we do.
And maybe Pig the Tourist by Aaron Blaby, which is in at number eight.
No, I don't know that one at all.
Oh, he's Pig the Poet. You might be, your kids might be a tiny bit old for that, but he's a very funny picture book writer.
Right.
Everything is Effed by Mark Manson is number nine. And number 10 is still Sally Rooney with Normal People.
Oh, good.
Great to see that that's so high on the list. So, that's our top 10.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. So a reminder for me to read Kate Atkinson and City of Girls coming up. So we've covered off a couple of those. And now on to our book of the week, Exploded View by Carrie Tiffany. And Carrie Tiffany is an Australian author. So she lives in Melbourne, but she actually was born in England in West Yorkshire and grew up in Perth and spent some time in her 20s as a park ranger in Central Australia and now lives in Melbourne. This is her third novel. So her first novel, Everyman's Rules for Scientific Living, won several awards in 2005 and also was shortlisted for the Miles Franklin, speaking of which, and the Orange Prize, which is now the Women's Prize for Fiction. Her second book, Mateship with Birds, in 2013 won the inaugural Stella Prize. Now, I haven't read those, and this one, Exploded View, I think is her third novel, and apparently people have said is quite different from those two. But have you read her other books, Annie?
I haven't, no, but I get the sense that this is a bit darker. And her Mateship with Birds, I think we often sell as a young adult title, whereas this one I think is definitely not that, even though it is about a young person.
Yes. So this is set in the late 1970s in the outer suburbs of, I think Perth, but did
I
you?
I think it is,
And it's narrated by a girl who's about 12 and she lives with mother and father man, which I took to mean he's not her real father, and she talks about the time before, and that I think is the time where her real father was living with them. So this is, you know, you read between the lines, but it's been described as a dysfunctional family. I actually think that reduces the story a bit, because I think it's more terrifying than that.
It's more sinister than that.
More sinister than just saying, I mean, dysfunctional family can be almost blasé, I think, but that's how she describes it. And so the first part of the book is her sort of day-to-day life, and she reads a Holden car manual. So she helps out a bit with Father Man. He works with cars in the garage out the back, and she loves cars, and she loves reading this manual, and it starts to feel uneasy, and you do sense that something's not right, and she's not speaking, and she says she hasn't spoken for 17 days, and so it's by choice that she's not speaking, but, you know, you wonder, well, why is that? Then they go on a road trip, and then the last part of the book is after they return from the road trip. So there's not a huge plot, and, of course, there's not much dialogue because she doesn't speak. And so that can sound quite not super engaging read when it's just someone's thoughts that is the main thrust of the story, but it is incredibly compelling. The writing is very spare and full of energy, but the energy is controlled because she's revealing what's happening slowly, and it's been described as tense, and Helen Garner said it's superbly controlled, like dark secret music rising from an abyss. So that's the sort of feeling of the book, and it is actually a short book, so I don't want to say too much about what happens, and we won't spoil anything, but that gives you a sense of what it's about. What did you think, Annie?
It was a difficult read. I think it's not an enjoyable read. It's hard for me to say whether I liked it or not. I think it's a good book. It's definitely going to stay with me. It's a very unsettling and taut and, as you say, tense book. I thought it was a real ache of a book, you know. Yes. You just really feel for this young girl who has seemingly nowhere to turn. Her only defence against this person who is not treating her well and her family well at all is silence, and then a bit of kind of revenge. She takes her revenge on the cars almost as a proxy for this man in their life.
I think she does that so well of making you realise, and not through straightforwardly telling you, but much more effectively through being in the head of this girl, she does make you realise why she can't tell someone, why it's not that simple. So, for example, you know, can she turn to her mother? Well, her mother either might not believe her, or might then have to bear the burden of what she wants to tell her, or there might be all sorts of consequences of that make it very difficult. And then likewise school just seems irrelevant to her, and you really get a sense of why a child might not want to go to school, and it's not even through a dislike of school, but just everything at school just seems so irrelevant for, you know,
exactly. Given that her concerns are much more
She's got much more pressing, urgent concerns. So it does it really gives you a sense of how that would happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. She absolutely captures a lonely, scared person who's trying to dissociate from her feelings and not even trying to understand what's going on around her, but trying to shut it down and just carry on. Yeah, it was desperately sad, I thought.
Yeah.
And I think she makes a really interesting portrait of this person who is a broken person, and for reasons that you can see why. And I don't think she makes her easily likable or all that sympathetic, really, even though you're feeling horrible about the situation that she's in. The narrator isn't necessarily blameless either. She does some questionable things, and I think it's a real look at cruelty and casual. The way that turning away can be the cruelest thing of all. Yes. You know, they drive on the road trip, for example, they drive past multiple road incidents with animals first, and she describes the bodies lying broken, and Father Man doesn't even stop. I think they run over a rabbit or something reasonably sized at one point, and he just carries on. And then
there's that violence running through the book, and it's almost that she can speak about that sort of violence, and it just gives you a sense of what else people might be capable of, doesn't it?
But when they drive past a car accident, for example, she doesn't even really think about the people that might have been involved. It's more about the colliding of the chassis and the motor is over here and spare parts from the car are strewn across. It's almost like she...
Her brain just can't process trauma, and she takes comfort in the car manual, and I think that's... And so she can name all the parts of the car, a Holden car manual, and Holden for... our overseas listeners, although they probably are aware of it, is quite an iconic Australian brand of car that was until recently made in Australia. And it was a real symbol of, you know, the classic Aussie family car, wasn't it?
But very blokey, I think, as well. And I think there's a whole lot of masculinity issues tied up here.
Yeah, so there's all of that, there's another element, but she can name all of those things and she names all the parts of the car and she turns to that manual, and likewise when they go past the accident, that's something that I think she feels safe naming that, because they won't do anything, you know, she knows cars and that the cars won't hurt her in a sense. That's safe. But I thought this was incredible. I thought it was a really, I mean, as you say, it stays with you, and it's almost after reading it that you can reflect on what an amazing piece of writing it is. But it's not something that you can't say you're loving reading it at the time.
But I couldn't put it down.
It was engrossing,
and it drove you forward. I think sometimes books without a plot, as you say, can be a bit
daunting.
And tasteless as well, because you don't really have any drive. Whereas this, I think the structure of it was really clever in those three short segments, which seemingly have not much to do with each other. It's just kind of an arbitrary one side of a road trip and then the other, and then the duration of the road trip in the middle.
Yeah.
But it's almost like she's giving you an exploded view in terms of the car part of this is her life and this is her family and these are all the pieces that put it together and this is the part that's broken, and if you could fix that broken part, but that the broken part wears down the other parts around it, and so then you have to replace those two. And
She does it beautifully, doesn't she? And they do sort of fit together. I think she comes back from the road trip very subtly changed, but importantly changed, where she can see things a bit more clearly and she starts to resist a bit more. And we won't spoil anything, but I think that's the difference between before and after the road trip. Having said that it is harrowing, I suppose, and bleak, it is. I actually found some humour in it, and the humour at the same time is also makes it extra poignant, because it's the humour of a child who, you know, just tells it how it is in the way that a 12-year-old girl would when they're not quite adult enough to be really tactful. So at the same time as that is funny and very dry, it also does make it more heartbreaking that it just reminds you that, you know, she's so young. But there are things like, she says, the fat lady's letter, there's a fat lady who lives next door who she calls the fat lady, and she says, the fat lady's letterbox is empty. It is not the day for envelopes from the council or reminders from the podiatrist. And I just, that, you know, that's an example of, she's telling you so much in that sentence. So A, you realise this girl's been rummaging through fat, you know, knows around in fat lady's letterbox before, so she knows what's coming, or she presumes. And B, the fat lady doesn't have a huge whirlwind of a social life with people writing her, you know, glamorous letters. I found that really telling and very funny. And then there's another bit where she says, the label says Household Linens Proprietary Limited, and the corner of it has been snipped off with a pair of scissors, which I think means there was something imperfect about it, that it was going cheap. So it's that very blunt.
She's very perceptive, isn't she?
Very perceptive. And so that, and as you say, the fact that she's, because it's pared back and something does happen on every page, that there is that pace. I found it really compelling and not depressing, but it really does hit you hard. It was still, the prose was so strong that it was...
The prose was so poised and...
Yeah.
poetic at times, like lots of its sections could be, you know, pulled out and made into little poems of their own, I think.
Well, there's a line where she says the cicadas stitch their song into the sky, for example. So it's full of beautiful turns of phrase like that, but never just for the sake of it. It's very...
No, it's not gaudy. It's very pared back.
Very strong. I just thought this was extraordinary, and it is so controlled. So this sense that something is wrong, it really circles around, you know, whilst this girl is very blunt and tells you how it is, there's one thing she's not telling you, and that is a very effective way of conveying to the reader how traumatic this thing is in her life, that she can't name it. She can't name anyone in her family. She's not wanting it to be real. And so she, and not even consciously, I imagine, this is just her, it's a coping mechanism. But you just slowly get a sense of something that she's not telling you, and you start to piece it together yourself. And the way that Carrie Tiffany does that, I thought was absolutely masterful. And
I think you never know exactly what's happened.
No.
But you know that something awful has happened, and you know the shape of that, but you don't get the details. You don't get the blow by blow.
I think you get enough, though, to draw. I think you can draw inferences.
There's a beautiful quote from towards the end about that, where she says, "I know now what has been taken from me. It's confusing, this exchange, because sometimes you could think with what's left behind that you're being given something. But no, it's a taking. Father Man has taken my chance to tell all the parts of my story. There will always be this part that can never be told." And that for me just sucked the book up. How can you put words to an experience like that?
That is just heartbreaking, isn't it? I actually wrote down that line as well. And it's just, you read that and it really makes you stop and think about how vulnerable children are. You know, as she says, nobody bothered to turn away. There's people not helping her.
No.
But it really is. And the tone, we've talked about this sort of uneasy tone or the sinister feeling of the book, there's also moments of hope. But I found the moments of hope made it heartbreaking as well, because it just makes you realise how lonely she is.
Vulnerable.
How scared she is. So she says things like, "I think I could live in the fat lady's laundry." So she's like really thinking maybe that's an option. And then an Avon lady calls past, and there's this part where she says, "I want the Avon lady to stay here and live with us." And it goes on from there. But it's just she really is, you know, wanting to reach out and wanting...
She knows her situation is not good.
Yeah, she doesn't knows know that where it to needs, turn. She needs, a, you know, someone to help. That, I mean, it gives you hope as a reader, because you think she's still realising that...
She's resourceful,
She's resourceful, and she realises that there might be an alternative, and she needs to seek that out. And that's,
well, doesn't she say at one point, turning 15 is the best thing that can happen to you, because then you can drive a car and then you can drive away from here or something along those lines.
Yeah. She's really thought through.
She's holding out for that getting out of there, but...
So it does...
That's the one.
It does give you hope.
What did you think about the landscape that she presents? Because Carrie Tiffany presents this landscape that is just dominated by roads, and the narrator is obsessed with the road and imagining the road stretching out in front of you. And it's almost like the road trip that they go on travels from, I think, Perth all the way up to the north of Queensland. So she mentions a couple of place names, and I was kind of tracking it, and they must drive across the Nullarbor and then along through Port Augusta and then into New South Wales, but then up, and they go into Queensland somewhere, and then they reach the sea, you know. And she doesn't describe any of the bush or the landscape really that they pass through. She describes towns and roads and all of these man-made structures. I found that a fascinating look at our country.
I think if she was noticing the trees or the birds or the landscape, that would almost be the sign of a normal, healthy girl who's got a clear mind, who's sort of carefree enough to take pleasure in that. And she clearly isn't, and she's clinging to the familiar things that make her feel safe, I think. But also, I know Carrie Tiffany has spoken about that she loves cars and mechanics and road trips, and she's fascinated by that interplay between cars and the sort of masculinity culture in Australia. So these are things that she's interested in, and I suppose that's fed through into the story.
And maybe, well, I'm just thinking out loud, I didn't pick up on this at the time, but this just goes to show how much there is to unpack in such a small book. But maybe that road trip gave her the idea that you know, you can go a long way away on a road, that, you know, if you can get into a car and drive, you can really escape.
And I think she sees those characters who are living their lives separate from or differently to how she is having to live her life. Like, yes, there's a woman in a Cortina, I think, who they drive next to for about 5 minutes.
Right. Who's happy.
And she, singing along.
Yeah.
And she just thinks, that could be me. I could be in a Cortina.
Yeah, it's very visual, isn't it? Even though it's quite sparse, I could really see this as a really spare, independent film. Could you just imagine
like
it?
Like a Sofia Coppola kind of.
Yes.
Just lots of panning and no dialogue.
Well,
lots of ominous music.
There's an issue with dialogue. No, I thought this was really extraordinary. It was one of those books that is, as you say, it's haunting, it stays with you, and it's hard when you finish it. You need a bit of recovery time from this one, I think. But that's a good...
Not a holiday read.
Yes,
not
and
a
no.
Beach read. Yeah, no, but
not,
I don't know.
It's not, it's not a light beach read.
I think you need to give it space as well. Even though it's a short book, it did take me a longer time than I thought it would. It took me a week or so to read, because I think even though I wanted to keep reading, the sentences by and a sentence by sentence level, there's so much there to unpack and so much to kind of read, but you can't skim this book.
No,
you know, you need to really soak in it and take it in.
I think what this did for me, and we say desperately sad, and the issue that it's bringing to your mind is very sad, and it does make you think about that, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But whilst you say desperately sad, this to me actually took something that is sad and elevated it, because it's such an accomplished work. It actually elevated it into a thing of beauty, into something that is quite a beautiful work of art.
Yeah, so
I think it transcends that.
Because I think it's not sordid, even though it's about sordid themes.
No,
but
it's like she's abstracted it almost.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually, because it's not glorifying it either, you know.
No,
trying to beautify something that's ugly. It's just an incredibly, as you say, it's a work of art that makes you feel and puts a shape around something that ordinarily doesn't have a shape or we can't put words to.
Yes. No, I think it really is worth reading. So that is Exploded View by Carrie Tiffany. What a revelation. I hadn't read her before. So,
do you think you'll go back and read the others?
I think
I'd be keen to read Match It With Birds.
Yeah, I will. I think I will. Well, I definitely will. I just don't know when. When I'll get to it.
The large always.
Yeah, I would like to. So next week, Amanda and I will be back with The Train Was On Time by Heinrich Boll. And then Annie and I, we want to do Three Women by Lisa Tadeo. Is it out yet?
I think it comes out tomorrow.
Okay, so we'll be in the process of perhaps reading that, but we'll update soon. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at @abaileycarris. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at @Mr_Annie. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye for now.